Good afternoon, everyone. I call this meeting of the Committee on Workforce and Business Development, Finance and Policy to order. Members, as customary, please mute your mics, and testifiers and guests likewise. This remote hearing is conducted pursuant to Rule 10.01. This remote hearing can be viewed at the House Television webcast. With that, I'd like to ask the Committee Legislative Assistant, Mr. Badri, to now take the role.
Chair Noor.
Present.
Chair Noor present. Vice Chair Zhang.
Present.
Vice Chair Zhang present. Lead Hamilton.
Present.
Lead Hamilton present. Baker. Baker. Dabney. Dabney. Frankie.
Frankie present.
Frankie present. Greenman.
Present.
Greenman present. Haley. Haley. Juergens.
Juergens present.
Juergens present. Cagle.
Present.
Cagle present. Katiza Watun.
Katiza Watun present.
Katiza Watun present. Olson.
Present.
Olson present. Zhang.
Present.
Zhang present. Baker. Baker.
Baker present.
Baker present. Dabney. Haley.
Haley present.
Haley present. Chair Noor, we have a quorum.
Members, there's a quorum present. With that, I will entertain a motion to approve the minutes of the joint hearing on the 8th with the Early Childhood Education Finance and Policy Committee. Representative Greenman, do you move the minutes for the February 8, 2022?
Yes, Chair, I move those minutes.
Representative Greenman moves the approval of the minutes for February 8, 2022. Any discussions? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Seeing none, the minutes for February 8, 2022 is now adopted. The next minutes that we have is for the previous meeting, the approval for minutes of February 14, 2022. Vice Chair Jay Zhong, do you move the approval of the minutes?
So move, Mr. Chair.
Vice Chair Jay Zhong, moves the approval of the minutes for February 14, 2022. All those, any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Seeing none, the minutes for February 14, 2022 is now adopted. With that, members, we do have three bills that we're going to be hearing today. With the first bill with Representative Raya, that is House File 2017. I will move the House File 2017 to be re-referred to State Government Finance and Policy Committee. Representative Raya, I see that you have Amendment A2. Would you like us to move the A2 amendment?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair.
I move A2 amendment. Do you want to briefly explain the A2 amendment, Representative Raya?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. The A2 amendment is a technical amendment that cleans up some language that was unclear and in some cases redundant. And this was in collaboration with MMB and with other input.
Members, with that, I move the approval for the A2 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? See none, A2 amendment is now adopted. To your bill, Representative Raya's amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee members. I'm here today to talk about House File 2017, a bill that adopts the recommendations from the Advisory Task Force on State Employment and Retention of Employees with Disabilities. This task force included representatives of 9 state organizations that focus on the needs of people with disabilities, as well as MMB. This bill means a lot to me. I ran for office, as I'm sure we all did, to make the world a better and fairer place. House File 2017 does this by implementing the straightforward but very important recommendations that you'll hear about in a moment. To me, the bipartisan support for this bill from our Senate colleagues, Senator Epke, Corin, and Abler, speaks to its broadly accepted importance. The essence of the bill is that the state of Minnesota needs to do better to have a workplace where people with disabilities can succeed. Right now, we fall short. However, I'm convinced that as a state government, we have the will to make a difference and the will to make the changes that are required. These changes are embodied in the recommendations that, and I quote the task force report, will demonstrate the state of Minnesota's commitment to the hiring, retention, and advancement of the people with disabilities by modernizing outdated and potentially discriminatory language, creating more clarity and consistency, and adding capacity for essential equity work. I'd like to thank the task force participants for your hard work in 2019 to 2021, including working through the height of the pandemic. My thanks too to DEED and MMB for working through details of this bill. Next, Trevor Turner from the Minnesota Council on Disability will explain the bill in more detail. Thank you. I'll look forward to your questions and ask for your support to pass this bill out of the Workforce and Business Development Committee and back to State Government and Elections Finance and Policy Committee.
Thank you so much, Representative Rye, for the presentation of the bill. Now to Mr. Tanner, please introduce yourself to the committee and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Noor and members of the committee. My name is Trevor Turner, and I'm the Public Policy Director for the Minnesota Council on Disability. I'm also a deafblind Minnesotan. The Minnesota Council on Disability is leading effort to increase disability representation in the Minnesota state government workforce. We believe that more disability representation in our state enterprise, especially those in leadership positions, will lead to better decisions being made around state disability policies. Minnesotans often face difficult or even insurmountable barriers in finding and maintaining employment, and the state of Minnesota is no exception. Unfortunately, Minnesota does not have adequate disability representation in its workforce. In the year 2000, employees with disability represented 10% of the state's workforce. By 2014, that number dwindled to just 3%. After Governor Dayton's executive order 14-14, the number rose to 7%. However, much of that could be attributed to existing employees aging into disability. When it comes to recruiting new employees with disabilities, the Star Tribune reported in 2019 that 50% of new hires with disabilities left their positions after less than 1 year. The majority of them cited hostile work environments, poorly trained hiring managers, and workplace accommodations being provided slowly or not at all. In 2019, a bipartisan group of legislators worked to create the Advisory Task Force on the Employment and Retention of Employees with Disabilities, who spent the next 2 years researching and investigating the issue. And in February of 2021, their report was released to the legislature. House File 2017 would codify the recommendations made by the task force and would demonstrate the state of Minnesota's commitment to the hiring, retention, and advancement of people with disabilities by modernizing outdated and potentially discriminatory language, creating more clarity and consistency on disability employment policy, training and educating hiring managers, providing a support structure for employees with disabilities, improved data collection and policies and structure, and added capacity for essential equity work. And far too often, policies that significantly impact Minnesotans with disabilities are decided by a small group of non-disabled policymakers. Minnesotans with disabilities need not only our voices to be heard, but a seat at the state governing table. This is a nothing about us without us bill, which would require more consultation with people with disabilities. Increasing disability employment and retention among the state government workforce creates a pipeline of future leaders and policymakers with disabilities in our state enterprise system. It also strives to make the state a model employer, which Minnesotan companies and small businesses can look to for guidance. When Minnesotans with disabilities make decisions in our state agency, the disability community in our state will be better represented in and better served by our state government. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much, Mr. Tanner, for your testimony. This committee appreciates the work and values the work done by the disability community. In fact, the funding that we made for workforce, which you have touched some of it, that goes through DEED, there's a significant investment that we've made in that area. And so the next person that we have is Ms. Wilson. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and continue.
Good afternoon, and thank you, Chair Noor and members of the committee, for allowing me to testify today on such an important bill. My name is Brittany Wilson. I live and work in St. Paul and am passionate about disability advocacy. I serve on the board for the ARC Minnesota, and as a private citizen, I volunteer my time serving on the Governor's Council for Developmental Disabilities, and I'm also a community leader for the Home Care Union, SEIU. I'm proud to say that I work for the Minnesota Council on Disability as a communications officer, a job I applied for with the Connect 700 certificate. I help relay important information to the community and often act as a bridge to state government. I was born with a joint and muscle condition called arthrogryposis and have used a wheelchair to navigate the world. Many, including the doctors who warned my mom I'd never go to school or be able to live a, quote, quality life, would be surprised to know that I not only graduated high school, but also college, and that I've been gainfully employed with competitive wages for over a decade, which is a big deal, especially for a disabled woman of color. I've had to advocate every step of the way to prove that I can work, to prove that I'm just as valuable of an employee as my peers, and it hasn't been easy. I remember showing up to a government building last year to fill out paperwork to work for the Minnesota Council on Disability and warning the HR representative that I needed an accessible entrance beforehand. After arriving, I discovered that the entrance that I was told to go to had a flight of stairs. After 10 minutes of calling the HR rep and explaining again that I couldn't access the building, they discovered for the first time where the accessible entrance was. I'm pleased that my Connect 700 experience has been supportive at the Minnesota Council on Disability, but what if I was hired to work in HR and on my first day, I discovered that no one in the office knew what entrance was best for me? Without proper training or expertise, this current system is set to fail people with disabilities. And as a person who benefits from the CADI waiver and PCA services, I know what it is like to rely on our systems. Throughout my 20 plus years of navigating them, I've often wondered why I've never met anyone who looks like me. I've wished that I could meet someone who understood what it's like to actually be disabled. Most recently, during a reevaluation for my waiver, which took place on the telephone, I revealed that I used a wheelchair, and the state employee responded with, "I'm sorry." When I asked them what they were sorry about, I was met with silence. I don't want anyone's sorries. I want to be treated like a human being instead of being pitied. I want to see representation. I want to know that the decisions being made that will affect my life and my community are being made by people with disabilities. Because when we hire, retain, and promote people with disabilities, naturally, we're going to create systems, policies, and laws that are more reflective of the people and their needs. I'd like to remind us here that 1 in 5 Minnesotans have a disability, and that those statistics do not include the great impact that COVID-19 has had as a mass disabling event. I urge you to support House File 2017 and demonstrate through action your support to hire and retain state employees with disabilities. We are waiting and we are watching to make sure that the equity, diversity, and inclusion that our state has committed to includes folks with disabilities. We can do better, and in my opinion, we must. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Wilson, for sharing your story and bringing the sense of urgency of now to all of us. And with that, I just wanted to ask if there's any discussion, members, any I see Lead Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And first of all, to the author, thank you for offering up that amendment. I know that some of our members had questions in state government, and I know that you wanted to have a bill that was bipartisan in nature, and I appreciate that. Thank you so much. To the testifiers. Sorry.
Take your time, Lead Hamilton.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman. I should come back to me for a moment. Could you, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, please. I know there's no any other advocate that I can, say in our committee or any other place when it comes to advocating for individuals with disabilities, as you've always reminded us. Whenever we have got a bill, we must make sure that it's more inclusive. And that's something that we will commit ongoing to make sure that we have an inclusive society where everyone, regardless of their abilities, are included in the conversation and discussion and also the decision-making process that we do in this committee and also in other places.
I'll try this again, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Lead Hamilton.
All right, I just want to say thank you for your testimony. You know, I too have a disability. And it's always frustrating, you know, when you encounter things that it has been so easy for others to overlook. And, you know, I don't know why I'm struggling so much. It's inspiring, Ms. Wilson, your testimony. It gives me inspiration. Mr. Turner, it's always a pleasure working with you as well. You know, I think back, I've struggled over the years. And I think back to the time when my daughter and I were going into this building and it wasn't wheelchair accessible. And the person that met us at the door said, you know, if you go down around the corner and through the back, there's accessibility that way. And my daughter turned to the turned to him and said, if my dad can't come through the front door, we're not coming in at all. You know, when you roll in someone else's shoes, you look at life a little bit differently. So again, I want to thank everybody, all the testifiers. I want to thank the chair for hearing the bill and Representative Breyer for carrying the bill. And I apologize. I apologize for breaking down here, but this is very, very real. And it impacts real people. I'll be supporting the bill. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Lead Hamilton. There's nothing to apologize. We're here to work with you and continue this effort and fighting for individuals with disabilities as we continue. So thank you so much for sharing your story, your situation. As always, you have inspired us and to continue this effort and fight. We will be with you in terms of continuing that effort as much as we can. Representative Raya, I don't see any other individual. If there's any other member who wants to comment, that would be great. Otherwise, if you have any closing remarks, please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Noor. I would like to just make a comment of thanks to our testifier, Ms. Wilson, for sharing your story and The emotion of it and the urgency of it, I think that the pace that we follow here sometimes forgets the urgency of the needs that people in our state are confronting. Lead Hamilton, I thank you so sincerely because you too are doing more than any words about a bill could do to show how important this work is. If we weren't doing this work, these problems, these situations that affect people's lives would not change, and it's our job to change them. And I appreciate you being so real with us and for supporting the legislation. So with that, I thank you, Chair and Committee.
Thank you so much, Representative Ryan, for bringing this bill forward, and to the testifiers for sharing their story and getting us grounded on these key important issues. With that, I would like to renew my motion that House File 2017, as amended, be re-referred to State Government Finance and Policy Committee. CLA will now take the role.
Chair Noor?
Aye.
Vice Chair Zhang?
Aye.
Lead Hamilton?
Aye.
Baker?
Aye.
Dabney?
Oop, aye.
Frankie?
Frankie, aye.
Sorry, can you repeat that?
Oh, aye.
Thank you. Greenman?
Aye.
Haley?
Aye.
Juergens?
Juergens, aye.
Cagle?
Aye.
Katiza Watun?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Zhang?
Aye.
Chair Noor, we have 13 ayes and 0 nays.
With 13 ayes and 0 nays, the motion is now approved. You are on your way to back to government, state government. So thank you so much, Representative Breyer and everyone else. The next bill we have is House File 2921. I'd like to welcome Representative Wazlowick to the committee, and I will move the motion that House File 2921 to be re-referred to Judiciary, Finance and Civil Law Committee. Welcome to the committee, and please introduce your bill. And I see you have an A1 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yep, I do have the A1 amendment, and I can briefly describe that. The A1 amendment, please. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A1 amendment clarifies that self-employed employees are exempt from and not subject to the compensation requirement under Subdivision 4, but that they can choose to pay themselves or they can apply for compensation under Section 2, similar to an unemployed juror. So that's what that amendment does. That was feedback that I received from some folks that are self-employed on that issue. And so we wanted to integrate that into this amendment.
I now move A1 amendment. Any discussion, members? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Aye. Seeing none, the A1 amendment is adopted. To your bill as amended, Representative Wazlowick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members for hearing the bill today. The right to a trial by jury is a fundamental right that's guaranteed to every citizen in both the United States and Minnesota constitutions. Our system of justice depends on the willingness of private citizens to serve on juries and to make important decisions in court cases. Unfortunately, not all Minnesotans can fulfill their civic duty by serving on a jury because they cannot afford to do so. House File 2921 is an attempt to address this problem. I'm gonna just briefly explain what the bill does for folks and then wrap up, and then we can take any questions that folks have. So what the bill does, it requires employers to pay workers their regular wages when they are called to serve jury duty. It notes that full-time employees must receive their regular wages up to the 8-hour day that they're working. It exempts small employers from the requirement to pay this wage when they're serving on jury duty. And then they can also be exempted employers with more than 50 workers, which would be not the small employers, can be exempted if they can demonstrate that paying wages would be a financial hardship. In addition, there's the House File 2921 provides a way for some employees to receive compensation in lieu of regular wages from their employer. So for example, if an employer did seek to be exempted with the waiver because it would be a financial hardship for their business, those folks could apply to receive compensation in lieu of their regular wages, as well as unemployed workers and a couple other categories that are laid out in the bill. And then I do want to note compensation under the section is capped at $120 a day. So there is also some language in there that states that serving on a jury is an excused absence. It is a really important civic duty that folks have, and we want to make sure that folks are actually, we have clear language enabling them to have that time off. Before we move on to questions, I do want to note that this bill is a start to this conversation. One of the potential jurors in the Kim Potter trial, this is where the bill came from, said that when asked if she would be able to serve on the jury, said she wasn't sure because she would have to check with her employer. And part of the issue was as a single wage earner, she was the only one who was supporting herself. So she had concerns that if she didn't get paid her wages, she wouldn't be able to serve on the jury. So that's the impetus of this bill, trying to solve that problem of folks who that what the state pays right now is a pittance, and it's not enough for folks who rely on their wages to support themselves or their families, especially if they have a lengthy trial that they're serving on. And I do want to note, I know I did see the letter from the Federation of Independent Businesses. I know there are concerns with this putting it on businesses. This is a start to the conversation. I'm more than willing to work with folks who want to help me solve this problem so that we can have a jury of our peers that includes all Minnesotans, not just those who can afford to serve on the jury. Thank you for the time here to present the bill, and I'm certainly open to questions. And if you know folks have questions or concerns they want to talk about, I'm happy to do that.
Thank you so much, Representative Postlewick. Discussion members. Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Excuse me. And Representative Wozlewick, I like the bill. This is refreshing, sort of in a way, to look at a bill like this that actually takes some small steps to doing what I think a lot of employers are doing already. And it's a lot more, it has a lot more ability to sort of start crafting it. You seem very open to changing this as it moves along. I'd like to know the next step of this bill. As an employer myself, I have always paid my employees in full for the time that they've lost. But I know that not everybody does that. And we as employers are finding ourselves being a lot more sort of mentors for people, but also responsible to make sure our employees are well taken care of. And we don't want to have anybody not feel like they can't serve on jury duty. So I think this is a very reasonable bill that let's continue to work on this as it moves along. So I have a couple of little quick questions. Number one, where is it looking like it's going on the Senate side? I know we have a short session. We don't have a lot of time to mess around. This bill needs work a little bit, but I definitely want to be a part of the process to help understand this. And again, I think that actually that would be the only question I want to ask, because I think you answered it. Where did it come from? I didn't think that this was a major issue, but from the Kim Potter thing, I do see that is a reason that it come up. So where are things at across the hallway, and how can I help?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm so used to chairing, I just want to jump in and answer questions right away. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Baker. It doesn't have a Senate chief author at this point. I'm certainly, if you have suggestions, otherwise I can approach folks over there, but it was sort of a just came out of nowhere idea for this bill, and I'd been working on it pretty close to when it got a hearing. So I don't have a current author over there, but certainly want to move this forward and want to work on making this work. I think it is, to your point, there are a lot of businesses that already do this, and so we want to make sure that for those that don't, that there's something there for them so that they are able to serve on juries too. So happy to continue to work with you and others who want to move this forward.
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's great. I might have some authors over there that might come to mind, so maybe we can connect afterwards. But thank you again. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Representative Haley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Wozlewick, for the bill. I also find it an interesting bill and an intriguing idea. And so my questions, too, are probably for, you know, kind of what's next as you work on it. I'm curious if you have any idea how many employers it would apply to. So your bill right now states, you know, small employers under 50. And then also, if you know how many jurors, you know, per year are seated in the state of Minnesota. So I'm just trying to kind of understand the universe of who it applies to and businesses that would be affected.
Representative Boswell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Haley, for the question. So I don't have an answer to the juror question. I can tell you that one. In terms of how many this applies, how many businesses this would apply to, I think one of the tricky parts is there's not necessarily one entity that has all of that information. So I can certainly check with the folks who submitted a letter with concerns about this bill with them and see if they know in their membership how many this applies to. But in terms of whether I can get an actual 100% complete answer, I'm not sure, but I can certainly follow up with the chamber and other folks and see if they have an idea of how many of their, at least how many of their members this would apply to and get back to you on that.
Representative Haley.
Thank you. That would be interesting. And I also think if anybody does have the data on how many jurors are seated a year too, that would be an interesting fact as you move the bill forward. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Cotizzo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Wazlik, for coming forward with this bill. I think it's really important to have this conversation because Representative Haley's point, I don't know that any Minnesotan truly knows how many of our neighbors and peers are serving on juries at any given point in time in Minnesota. And I wanted to just reiterate the fact that you said we want to make sure that the juries look like the state of Minnesota. And so if there are folks who aren't able to serve because they aren't getting paid, and to Representative Baker's point, I think that many of these businesses are already doing this. So it may impact fewer businesses than we think because lots of employers are already going ahead and doing the right thing, making sure the people get compensated for this time. So it would just be interesting if that data is accessible to get a little bit more information, but I appreciate you bringing it forward. And I think it's definitely a step in the right direction.
Representative Frankie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question about the bill is the discussion with the counties on this. Has there been much discussion in the counties or the court systems about this and what their thoughts were? And then how do you see like enforcement of, you know, making sure people are getting paid? Would this be something that would be run through the counties, through deed, through Department of Revenue, similar to any other employment payment issue? So those would be my questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Frankie, for the question. I haven't had any conversations with county folks yet, but I can certainly put that on my radar to engage with them on this. In terms of who it will be run through, there's actually a fiscal note requested, so we should have a little bit more information in terms of what pieces are going to be sort of integrated in that piece, and that should give us a little more information on where those costs are going to go and who's going to be in charge of that. So I know that is in process right now, and that'll help us figure that out as we move forward.
Representative Frankie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Walzoid.
Lead Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Wazlowick, if I read this correctly in the bill, if I'm self-employed, I have to pay myself. Could you help me with that? Is that a technical need or is that provision still in there after the amendment?
Representative Wazlowick.
Let me just take a look here. I know where that language is. So I believe that A1 amendment takes it up, but I'll have to double check. I had had a back and forth with the House research staff I was working with on this about taking out definitions and that sort of thing. So if that isn't already struck, I just don't have the amendment in front of me right at the moment, then that would be something we'd be taking out. Because what we heard was, it's sort of a weird thing to say in legislation, first of all, but it was also sort of a questionable thing about whether that would actually be possible. And so we had wanted to clarify that those self-employed employees are exempt from the compensation requirement. So if that language isn't struck by the amendment, which I believe it is, then that would certainly be something we would do in the next step as this goes to the next committee.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, is it possible to have nonpartisan staff to address that question?
That's where I was going. Ms. James, I see you're ready to respond if you have any response to that.
Thanks, Mr. Chair and Representative Hamilton. Yes, that is what the A1 amendment does, is it says that self-employed employees would not be subject to this. They could always choose to pay themselves, but they would be required to pay themselves. So that language was struck.
Okay. All right.
Lead Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to the author again, you know, I've been up here for quite some time now. This is my last year, but this is the first time that this issue has been brought up in the 18 years that I've been here. Is this a widespread, or is this a problem all across the state? Just help me understand a little bit about the background on bringing this forward, if you will, because like I said, I've never been called on this issue over the years.
Representative Wazlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Hamilton, for the question. Again, I think getting some of that information that Representative Haley requested about how many businesses will this impact, I think will give us more insights on that. I think where we see this happening the most, just from my conversations and from my research into this, seems like it's hourly wage employees. So those folks who maybe are working in a job that pays hourly wages that maybe doesn't pay a lot, but that is a necessary piece for folks to be able to support themselves and their families. So that's sort of my knowledge of like what sort of jobs this might apply to. And I think some of the bigger companies might be paying already for jury pay compensation. As Representative Baker and others have said, there are companies that are already doing this. But I think we'll get a better idea of that if we can gather that data from the chamber and others about what number of businesses already do this. And then that'll give us a good idea of what workers are impacted by something like this. So I can't give you specific numbers, but that's sort of waiting to be able to get more data on exactly how many companies are doing this already.
Yeah. And Mr. Chairman,
Reed Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I really appreciate the dialogue. You know, I had some questions about the technical workings of this bill. I believe that's being addressed with the amendment. And then also again, this has never been brought up to me. Not saying that there's not a problem out there, right? I'm just saying that my personal experience has been my employers have been willing to work with myself and others. And so I was coming into this as a no vote for those reasons. But I'm very intrigued about learning more as this thing moves forward. So I appreciate you bringing it and listening to our questions and concerns. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Lead Hamilton. Any closing remarks, Representative Wazlow?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members, for the good discussion. And I will echo what I'm hearing from members is I want to address this problem. And the way that we do that doesn't necessarily have to be 100% what's in this bill, but I want to move it forward so we can continue the conversation, continue to gather some of that data that will help inform who's impacted by this and what sorts of workers and that sort of thing. And so I appreciate the dialogue and hope that we can work together to make sure that folks can perform the civic duty of serving on a jury. And I will note, I think one of the things that makes this tricky, this conversation tricky, is we don't know how many, I got called for jury duty last fall, right before the election, and I asked to move it until after the election because it was crazy. It was a crazy time. And so we don't know, I think on that piece, we don't necessarily know. I don't know if there's statistics on who, like how many people have to do something like that where they postpone or where they can't do something for whatever reason. So I think that's another piece of it is there isn't sort of a way for folks who have some sort of hardship or conflict to move that or to postpone it. So I think that's another piece that we're missing is it might be some of those folks who aren't getting paid that are having to do that. So thank you again, members, for the conversation, and I look forward to continuing it as we move forward.
Thank you so much, Representative Wazlow. This is an important issue, and thank you for bringing this bill forward. They're looking forward to having more robust discussion as we go through the process. With that, members, will renew my motion that House File 2921, as amended, be referred to Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law. With that, the CLA will take the roll.
Chair Noor.
Aye.
Vice Chair Zhang.
Aye.
Lead Hamilton?
No.
Baker?
Baker, aye.
Dabney?
Dabney, aye.
Frankie?
Frankie, aye.
Greenman?
Aye.
Haley?
No.
Juergens?
Juergens, aye.
Cagle?
Aye.
Katiza-Witun?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Zhang?
Aye.
Chair Noor, we have 11 ayes and 2 nays.
With 11 ayes and 2 nays, the motion is adopted. Representative Vasilovic, you're on your way to Judiciary and Finance and Civil Law. The next bill that we have is House File 2811. Welcome, Chair Eklund, to the Workforce and Business Development Committee. I will move House File 2811 to be laid over for possible inclusion. Chair Eklund, I see you have a DE1 to put the bill in the shape that you want. Just wanted to move DE1 amendment. Members, to put this bill in a shape that we can get the chair explained, I just wanted to ask the chair briefly touch on the overall of the bill, and then we'll adopt the DE1.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. This bill started out last summer. Most of you remember that we had the boundary water, or not boundary waters, but the fires going in and around the boundary waters during the summer. And the Forest Service shut down a lot of the outfitting operations for 3 to 4 weeks in the middle of the season there. So if you all of a sudden you get shut down in August, you're pretty much not going to be able to recover from that. Well, after talking to many business leaders and community members in the district, we decided that we should try to expand this bill, because for the last 2 years with the Canadian government having a pretty much shutdown of the border, many of our border communities have really faced some real problems not having their Canadian customers come across. So that's why I have the DE1 the way it is, to expand it to be a border counties relief grant across the Canadian border, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you so much, Chair Eklund. Members, with the voice vote, all those in favor of adoption of DE1 amendment, please say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Seeing none, the DE1 author's amendment is adopted. To your bill as amended, Chair Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I apologize. I'm also an Ag Committee, and I might have some votes coming up, so I'm listening on my phone as I'm doing this, Mr. Chair. So we're multitasking.
It's always good to multitask, Chair Eklund.
There we go. So, Mr. Chair, members, this bill provides needed relief to many businesses along the Canadian border that have been devastated by the Canadian government's border closure. Even after the U.S. opened its borders, the Canadian government has made travel and trade with our communities virtually impossible. At a time when relief is being provided to many impacted by the pandemic, one group that is being forgotten are the hardworking men and women who have invested their lives and livelihoods in their businesses along the border. They have done everything to survive this crisis, and we have the resources to give them additional help. Mr. Chair, members, I have today with me testifiers from my district that have been deeply impacted by the Canadian border closure, and I invite them to tell you what is really happening along the border, and then I will stand for questions, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Eklund. I see you have Chairman Robert Dishkamp. So welcome to the committee, Mr. Chair, and introduce yourself to the committee and proceed.
Anine bonjour, Robert Dishkamp. I'm Robert Dishkamp. I'm the Grand Portage Tribal Chair. I don't think anybody in the state of Minnesota has been hit as hard as the Grand Portage Band or the tip of the Arrowhead here. We're one way in, one way out. We operate our casino, convenience store. We have a small resort that we run. 80 to 85% of our customers come from Canada. We're going on 2 years now without any customers. I've been the chairman for about a year and a half now. It'd be a heck of a time to take this seat. It's been a battle ever since I've been in this chair, but you know, we're making it. I don't know how, but we are. But our business, I suppose, is down 90%. The Canadian government did some lifting of the restrictions for crossing, but then they added a testing component to it. We had one day when our business seen a little influx, and after that day, we're right down to where we were during the pandemic. It's tough going up here in northeastern Minnesota at the tip. You know, we're 5 miles from Canada. We got 150,000 people 30 miles away that can't come here and support our community. I don't know if everybody knows where Grand Portage is, but we're in the middle of nowhere. I'm not much of a talker like the other tribal leaders, if you have a chance to talk to them, but I definitely appreciate Rob bringing this forward. So thanks, Rob.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair, for your testimony. As always, good to see you. The next person I have to testify is Paul Nivran. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed. Do we have Paul? Yep, you can continue. You're muted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon. My name is Paul Nevin, and I'm the director of the Kuching Economic Development Authority here in International Falls. And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, greetings from sunny International Falls, and thank you for the opportunity to hear our story here on the border. International Falls is a border community of approximately 6,000 people. We're also an inland port and a very busy border crossing that connects to our sister city in Fort Frances, Ontario, Canada, which has a population of about 9,000 people. You know, the COVID pandemic has affected us all and continues to affect us in so many aspects of our lives. And while border communities face the same impacts from the Minnesota executive orders issued in March 2020, as other communities have, these impacts were multiplied with the closure of the Canadian border, as the chairman referenced. These impacts were twofold, and this is really at the heart of the matter here. First, the retail pull area for our community extends well into Canada and adds some additional 15,000 customers to our local businesses. And those customers have essentially been lost during the length of this pandemic. Secondly, the brief summer tourism season, which starts with the Canadian fishing opener in mid-May, thousands of travelers pass through International Falls on their way to Canadian destinations. And many of these folks spend the night in International Falls, spend dollars on lodging, food, fuel, and supplies. And again, that those dollars and those folks have been lost during this time. And just to provide some numbers, and it's kind of staggering, in 2019, we had 398,300 border crossings. In 2020, we had 80,533. So it's very significant, that loss. You know, for many of our retailers and service providers, Canadian customers make up to and over 50% of their business. The prolonged border crossing has greatly stressed our local business community. And currently on our main business corridor, we have 10 long established businesses that are either for sale and have closed as a result of this. And for every month that border remains closed, the number of businesses that will continue to be affected may grow. And you know, it's not just the retailers. These impacts extend beyond that. Our airport serves summer travelers flying in and out. Our numbers, employment numbers are down drastically, as well as our medical and dental communities actually are impacted. A lot of Canadian customers come over to that service. And even community events and families have been disrupted. Concerts and summer events and winter events, actually, we've lost those Canadian folks that make us such a flourishing community. And while many of our businesses have taken advantage of the various federal and state relief programs, the duration of this pandemic and multiplied with that border closure has created a hardship that if it continues much longer, it will result in additional business closure and job loss. And with that, again, thank you for your time.
Thank you so much, Mr. Paul Nevin, and appreciate your testimony. The next person we have is Ms. Mindy. Trying to pull names here. Ms. Mindy Fredrickson, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Hi, good afternoon, and thank you, representatives. My name is Mindy Fredrickson. I am a owner with my husband of the Gunflint Lodge and Outfitters up in Cook County. And I'm here today to talk on behalf of this bill for the Boundary Waters Outfitters and small resort owners in northern Minnesota who've been financially impacted by the drought, fires, and evacuations and public land closures that occurred in 2021. We at Gunflint Lodge and Outfitters, we have a lakeside resort. We're also a Boundary Waters Outfitter, and we do a lot of activities on public lands. We have a riding stable, we have a zipline canopy tour, do a lot of guided fishing and guided Boundary Waters trips. Typically, as an employer, we're employing 55 to 60 people in the summer months and about half of that in the winter months. And just, you know, lodging is sort of the tourism is the primary business in Cook County. And lodging alone brings about $55 million to our county. And, you know, that's multiplied many times over when you consider the number of dollars that are spent in our restaurants, shops, and our outfitting businesses. You know, obviously 2020 during the pandemic has been a challenge for the tourism industry. We were shut down for a month due to the emergency do not travel order, during which time, you know, we laid off most of our staff and then, you know, had to rebuild staff and deal throughout 2020 with restaurant closures, capacity limits, and other mitigation measures. And during that time, really, we didn't receive any outside money from the state. We did weather that storm. And then in 2021, as you know, we started seeing, you know, there was drought up here, and we started seeing a number of forest fires that popped up in and around the Boundary Waters. The Forest Service began closing some entry points as early as early July, and by August 21st, the Forest Service had entirely closed the Boundary Waters. That stayed closed through the first week of September, but parts of the wilderness remained closed for an additional full month until the beginning of October. So, you know, essentially, the Boundary Waters outfitting business is, you know, maybe a 12-week venture, and you know, a third to a half of that was cut off. We were cut short and essentially ended our season at least 4 weeks early. In addition to the Boundary Waters closures, the Forest Service closed federal lands around us. So many of our trails that we use for other activities such as horse rides were closed. Public landings were closed. So guiding was fish guiding was ended early. So we did see a lot of impact from that. In addition, there were local and municipal orders that further interrupted our business. So for example, the Cook County Sheriff's Office put in a pre-evacuation order that, you know, essentially caused total cancellation of people who were coming up to do resort stays, even if they weren't going into the Boundary Waters. We went in that last week of August, which is really sort of the peak of the summer business for us, we went from being, you know, fully booked to essentially a ghost town overnight. So as a business, you know, I would say, personally, I would say, you know, we saw our own business, the outfitting business in August and September were, you know, totally closed several weeks early. The resort side of the business, we saw at least about a 12% reduction in revenues. And that's reflected throughout the county. You know, throughout the county, we saw lodging revenues in Lutzentofte and Grand Marais staying very strong, up year over year about 10 to 15% through third quarter. On the Gunflint Trail, third quarter really took a 5% reduction overall year over year. And prior to, prior to that, we had really been leading the county as far as our year over year lodging revenues were going. So, you know, we have just really seen a lot of impacts on the community in Cook County, as, you know, as Chairman Deschamps spoke to, Canadian closures, COVID closures and mitigation efforts. And then on top of that, the fires and evacuation orders and Boundary Waters closures have really impacted the communities. So we just, I just wanted to speak on behalf of the communities up here, especially the small mom and pop resorts and outfitters that have, you know, such short seasons and are so dependent on tourism and access to the beautiful public lands that we have available up here. So I would ask you as a committee to please keep this in mind and consider offering relief for those outfitters and small businesses and the community of Cook County and our other borderlands. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Fredrickson, for your testimony. We hear you. I know the challenges that many folks have expressed even last session. We'll continue to look into ways to support businesses that have been impacted throughout the process during the two-year challenge that we've been through. We have Mr. Boomer, the next testifier. Welcome to the committee and introduce yourself and proceed.
Hi, and thank you for taking the time and listening to us. And Bobby, thank you for getting us involved in this meeting. My name is Mike Boomer. I'm with my wife, Lori Boomer. We own and operate Ryden's Border Store up in Grand Portage. We're about 5 miles north of the Native Reservation there, and we're a half mile from the border. And on March 2020, somebody shut off the faucet. On the March 16th, the parking lot was busy and people coming and going. And on March 17th, it was gone. It was a ghost town. And we had to close. The duty-free store closed, the gas station closed, our general store stayed open because the general store we take mail, we take UPS and FedEx, but we've been down 90% since March 2020. We're losing money every day. We've done everything we can to maintain our employees. It is a challenge in the best of days to find employees and to keep families in our community, and we are losing them. And when you move, you go broke. So you're not coming back. And we've kept 60% of our staff through the PPP loans and some local loans. We've taken out two loans, personal loans. We're living in off of our savings, and we're going to have to take another loan depending on what happens in the next couple of weeks here with the Canadian government. And that's not anything this committee can work on, but they've been really frustrating with how they've sent news out. They just sent a news out that they stopped the PCR test, the mandating the PCR test, but you have to have another test that to show a negative COVID test, so that's a nothing burger. A nothing burger. So we're frustrated with that, obviously. And the challenge that we're working on is keeping our families here, keeping staff, and keeping our doors open. We also feel as if there's that black line across the northern border that's just been forgotten. And we thank you for taking the time and hearing from us. And Representative Eklund, thank you for expanding the bill. That was that was good news in a long, long newsreel of bad news. When we heard that it was being expanded, we felt, wow, someone's listening, someone's hearing us. So thank you, and thanks for taking the time.
Thank you so much, Mr. Boomer. Small businesses are always the economic engine for our state. We've been hearing a lot, so we'll be looking into ways to support small businesses like yours. And as we discuss and deliberate during this session, the last person but not the least is Mr. Johnson. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Yes, good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. Thank you for having me today. My name is Eric Johnson, and I'm representing my company, RLB, today. I'm a lifelong resident of International Falls and Rainy Lake. I'm going to testify to the impacts to my business and others due to the extended border closures during the COVID-19 pandemic. My business up here is pretty unique, but it illustrates the real far-reaching economic impacts of the border being closed for such an extended period of time. My business, like many others, caters to what I like to call transient tourists. And I define a transient tourist, at least up here in this area, as a tourist who is moving through the area on their way to their final tourism destination in Canada. This final destination could be a resort, a campground, or many times their private property that they own in Canada. These transient tourists impact our local economy in a number of ways, by buying gasoline, groceries, tackle, and other necessities while in our area. But also oftentimes they'll spend a night at a local hotel and dine at local establishments prior to their crossing into Canada. The cottage and cabin owners will buy building materials and other supplies on the US side of the border and import those items into Canada. So you can quickly see that the far-reaching economic impact that these transient tourists have on the community along the border. Now, personally, I am the owner and operator of RLB Incorporated. At RLB, we import and deliver fuel, primarily propane, to the cottage owners on Rainy Lake. Now, these cabins and cottages are only accessible by water. These deliveries are only done during the summer months by barge, and I'm the only one with the proper credentials and equipment to deliver their fuel. So my customers depend on me for their propane and gasoline needs, but I also depend on them to be using that propane and gasoline. So of my customers, approximately 80% of them are on the Canadian side of Rainy Lake. Of those, 70% are Americans who own properties in Canada. Now, those customers are not able to use their cabins due to the border closure since the pandemic. So the personal impact of my business is obvious. These people cannot get to their southern cabins and therefore cannot use any propane and gasoline. Since the pandemic, my business gross receipts are down over 50% in both 2020 and 2021 compared to the same time frame in 2019. RLB is a micro business. I'm the owner operator, so there's not as many avenues of financial help compared to larger, more traditional businesses. So I ask for this committee's support of the relief bill, HF 2811. It'll help my business and many other businesses along the border that were affected by the border closures caused by the pandemic. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you so much, Mr. Johnson, for your testimony. You should always know that this committee will always support micro enterprises to make sure that we have an economy that works for everyone. When any area of our state is impacted, we need to be standing together. So thank you so much for your testimony. Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you, Representative Eklund, for bringing this bill. You know, maybe a couple of questions I have, and it's good to see folks up from Borderland again. I was up there for 12 years. Love that area. You are thick with culture and sturdiness up there. You guys are tough, and I know what it's like up there. I got a lot softer, of course, when I moved down south. But maybe my question to Representative Eklund about the bill: you're looking for a 10% reduction in gross revenues from 21 as compared to 2020. And I'm in the hospitality business, and this maybe could be answered by Mr. Boomer or Mr. Nevin or something if Rob doesn't have it. But to me, it seems like our 21 year was better than 2020 because our at least our tourism came back a little bit, understanding that the bridge was still shut down by our friends to the north. I'm just curious, is that the right math to have in this bill? Is a 10% shortage as compared to 2020, or is that right? So I just want to ask you that, Representative Eklund.
Jacqueline.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Baker, what we based this bill off of is when we did the relief for the Mille Lacs businesses when we had the walleye crash or shortage or whatever. I wasn't around when that happened, but you know, we have amazing staff here. When I talked to Ms. Schillen about it, she said, well, yeah, I think this is where it'll work. So that's where that number came from, Representative Baker. And if we need to do a deeper dive, I certainly would be willing to take a look at that. But that's the backbone for where we are. Background for where we picked this up.
And
Representative Beck.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, I get it. I think we never expected this two-year delay, but I think 2020 was the one where that first spring, everything was shut down hard. People were a little nervous of coming out in the summer, but I think 2020 came back a little bit stronger. So I just want to make sure if this is going to do any good, that those receipts will actually add up like it's going to. And so that would be my only concern. Again, we've got border communities that saw devastation because Minnesota was way shut down on the North Dakota side and the Wisconsin side and so on. We didn't do anything like this before, but I get it. It is different when you're bordering another country. And they have been extremely limiting onto opening up travel, and they need to change those rules. I know there's a lot of activity up there right now just trying to get that attention, and I really hope that they get that the sense in them up there so you guys have a really strong, robust season coming up because, again, when a business closes up there, you lose jobs, you lose people in the school district, you lose housing, you lose so many other things that don't get made up like other communities do. So it is a very unique situation up there. I want to support this. Certainly, I want to just understand if these numbers are what we're going to need to make some relief up there, Rob. So hopefully that's something that we can look at in the future. So appreciate you letting me comment on this, Chair Knorr and Representative Eklund. Thank you for the bill.
Chair Eklund.
Well, thank you, Representative Knorr. And most people don't know that Representative Baker and I have a long history. I don't think either one of us could probably play softball anymore, but back in the day, we weren't too bad at it. So anyway, I appreciate the comments.
He declared himself to be more softer because folks in North, you know, from the North end are always strong and resilient people. So he's already declared himself.
Yep.
But anyway, thank you, Chair Knorr and Representative Baker. We will take a look at this. Obviously, bills like this are always a work in progress, and I appreciate that Chair Knorr has offered to hear this and lay it over, and we can do a deeper dive into those numbers to see if it's actually the numbers that we're looking for.
Absolutely. You know, we will be taking a look at the, you know, global perspective of different parts of the state and the need when it comes to the economic development support. So we haven't done a big dive into the economic need for small businesses this session. So this is a good start, and we'll look into how we can provide support. Any discussion, members? Sinan, do you have any closing remarks, Chair Eklund?
Well, thank you, Chair Knorr. And I'll use this old joke, and some of the people from the border community will maybe listen to it and smile, but the joke amongst some of the meat cutters in the grocery stores were, what has a turkey under each arm and smells like gasoline? Well, it's a Canadian shopper. So while that's kind of a little bit funny, there's a whole lot of truth to it because their community offers things, shopping and other things that we use as well as our communities on this side. So our communities are intertwined all along the Canadian border. I think this is one area that we've missed looking at over the last couple of years, and with our good friends from the north and their restrictions, it's made it quite a challenge for our business. So I want to thank all my testifiers that took the time today. I appreciate it. It's not always easy organizing these things, and I want to thank you, Chair Knorr, and committee for hearing the bill.
Thank you, Chair Eklund, and to the testifiers. With that, members, I renew my motion. House File 2811 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion. I don't see any other agenda item unless someone has got any quick information that they wanted to share. Otherwise, we are saving the additional minutes for the committee hearing today. So with that, we are adjourned.